One, always on FUBAR Radio.
That was Comedy with 800 Pound Gorilla on FUBAR Radio.
Dave Hill's podcasting incident on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Dave Hill's podcasting incident with me, Dave Hill, the pride of Cleveland and beyond. Chris, you know, with this whole pandemic, week two in a row or three in a row, I've not really gone anywhere. I mean, really, if anything, I thought I was cheated out of ice cream I thought I bought, but it turned out it was just in a different bag. And that was in University Heights, Ohio, about 45 minutes from where I'm staying.
Oh, wow.
My life's a mess. No, it's not. I'm actually, pandemic aside, I'm actually doing pretty well, all things considered. I think I'm hitting my pandemic groove. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm starting to hit that groove too. But with that comes like moments of pure dread and panic, and then like back to normal.
Oh, totally. I had a nightmare the other night where I did I just cut this out if I talked about this in the actual podcast, but I had a nightmare the other night that, you know, we were all told to like go back out into the world, be careful, everybody. Mm-hmm. And it was so crazy making. I was like, fuck this, I'm not doing this. And I think that will probably be my reaction when they do release us back into the wild. You know, not the federal government, because I think any reasonable person is done listening to the federal government. Anyway, let's get positive.
Yeah.
I think a wonderful episode for you today. Well, and Chris, you can edit out whatever negative stuff I said if it's too, you know, I know people come here for a break to be uplifted, not to hear my piling on the negativity in the world. But speaking of positivity, this is very exciting. If I can shamelessly plug the fact that my comedy album, The Pride of Cleveland, which is out April 24th on 800 Pound Gorillas, it is 800 Pound Gorilla Records, I can't speak. It is available for pre-sale worldwide, digitally. Get it anywhere, wherever you get your music online. Yeah. Go, you know, get ready to kick some ass with it, whatever the hell that means. Buy my album or I'll be deeply upset, I guess is my point. But I think it's the best comedy album.
It's great. You knocked it out of the park.
Oh, thank you. I hate to admit to such things, but I was watching the video of it because there is, you know, a video component to it that will see the light of day in some way, shape, or form down the line a little bit. But I was watching it today and I found myself kind of chuckling and smiling. And I was like, oh my gosh, well, did I just enjoy something I did? Because that doesn't really happen consciously too often. But
same way too. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I like doing stuff, but I don't really sit there and be like, oh, you know, I don't like put on, or yeah, you know, I don't sit around and read my books or whatever. But
I know. Do you ever like? I found like an old notebook from 4 years ago, and I was like, I'm gonna read this and just cringe. And there was like actually some stuff in there that made me laugh. I was like, oh, I want to meet this guy who wrote this. I forget.
Yeah. Well, you're a funny guy. You should meet that guy. I know that guy. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
Now, what can I do to get you to meet him, Chris? Anyway, so yeah, everyone, please go buy my album. Yes. Reorder it. I will not shut up about it. And also, speaking of buying things, if you haven't gotten the Witch Chain album, and who was I talking about this with? Oh, my, Tom Bozier, a.k.a. Tomah Guillotine, the other guitar player in Witch Taint. I think the Venn diagram of people who are into my comedy and everything else I do, and then the people that are into Witch Taint, the Venn diagram is, I'm not, there's, There's overlap, but I think there's not entire. It's not. It's, really? There's people that are into, definitely not into parts. But anyway, so buy the new Witch Taint album, Sons of Midwest and Darkness. And then, okay, one last plug. We've talked about how, you know, I posted on Instagram a while ago that I would, if people would DM their numbers, that I would call and sing Billy Joel songs of my choosing when they least expect it. And I sing hundreds of them all over the world, called everywhere. I'm terrified to see my phone bill. But it was just too entertaining to hear people laughing on the other line. I called a guy. Some guy wrote, and he's like, I'm in Slovakia, haha. And he put the number. I think the haha meant, like, there's no way you're going to call me. So I was like, I'm going to call that fuck.
Oh.
So I called this guy, and it had to have been, like, 4 in the morning in Slovakia. And he's like, oh. And then there's, like, a pause, and you just hear this guy laughing. And I was like, oh, that's hilarious. Like, you didn't think this was going to happen, and then it did. Anyway, so there we go. But now, in light of the disturbing popularity of that, I've now on Cameo, and I'm at Mr. Dave Hill there, at Mr. Dave Hill. You can go there and request me to do a video of a Billy Joel song for $20, and all proceeds will go to No Kid Hungry, which feeds kids in need of foods. So who doesn't want to help them? Because that's, you can, anyway, slice it, that's a great cause. And yeah, you get to have a video of me, oddly, not oddly, but probably unshowered, singing Billy Joel.
People request which Billy Joel song they want? Or
yeah, I mean, I made a mistake. Before, I was very clear, I will choose. But in the posting that I made, I forgot to mention that. And so people have been requesting the song, and I was like, do I give into this bullshit? I don't know, more in my head. I've been doing them. So far, I'm skipping the ones that have requested a specific song because I can't decide whether I want to honor their request. And I just go with the hits that I know. But I'll probably give in. Anyway, so there's that on Cameo, at Mr. Dave Hill, at Mr. Dave Hill. So those are the three things. Pre-order my album, The Pride of Cleveland, out April 24th on 800 Pound Gorilla Records. Get the Witch Taint record on TP Records and Cameo at Mr. Dave Hill. Do you have any shameless plugs, Chris, before we get into things?
Risk is doing all these live streams lately, and they've been really fun. And we're doing one for UK audiences, tomorrow, Saturday, April 18th at 2 p.m.
Oh, nice.
Eastern.
You know, I got an email about doing one of the Risk Zoom shows, and then now you're reminding me, they wrote back like, what story do you want to tell? And then I was like, ah. You know, when you get an email, they're like, oh, you want, I gotta do something else now, I have to write back, and you're like, I'm done. No. No, but I gotta write back. Anyway, let's get into this episode today. Our guest is comedian, actor, writer, and so much more, Eugene Merman. You know him as Gene on Bob's Burgers, and you know him from so many other things. And he has a movie out now, directed by Julie Smith, that's called, it started as a joke, and it's ostensibly about the Eugene Merman Comedy Festival, but then, we talk about it. It talks about his wife being diagnosed with cancer, and it's really, Chris, you and I talked about it. I just loved it. I thought it was so great, and I laughed my ass off, and I cried for like 5 different reasons. And
It's really, it's moving in a lot of ways, and just captures everything that Eugene's done for comedy and everything. It's really great.
Yeah, it's great. I totally recommend it. And even getting past the horrible egomaniacal comedian urge that you have when you're like, why am I not in this movie? So yeah, even that didn't, but any movie that I'm not in, but I could watch Citizen Kane tonight and I'll be like, why, where was the time machine, where was my audition? Anyway, I loved it. Started as a joke, and here we are talking.
It's available for streaming everywhere now, I think.
Yeah, should totally do that. So that's your fourth thing on the list of your walking orders. You don't have to do it in that order. Anyway, okay, so here we are with Eugene Lemon. Thank you for joining us on our podcast. It's sort of, you know,
you're very welcome.
Peoria, it's sort of a Peoria of podcasts, so it's a, you know, tertiary market, but thank you. But as I was telling before we hit record, I really love the movie so much. It was just and I know Chris did as well, and it's one of those things. So I mean, I'm sure you've been talking about it a lot, but it was just I Sheila Kenny sent over the link to watch it, and I kind of knew what I was in for, and I found myself like putting it off because I was like, oh man, I know I'm gonna really I knew I would enjoy it, and I knew that it was going to be powerful, and I was really like, I really loved it, and I was just I think I cried in about five different ways. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah
it's but it's also it's hilarious. It's hilarious also, you know, it's just great in so many ways. I have, before I forget, I think my, in this, after I heard it, this might be my favorite joke of all time. And it's your joke, is the one about teaching Russian where,
oh God, yeah, that was
the black crows.
That was so great.
Smell like trash. I was just like, that might be my favorite joke in,
yeah, in my wife and I actually rewound that to see it again. It was so good.
you can download the album and listen to it every download it. You could just listen to it on Spotify.
Oh my God, that was
every day.
That was
every day, very easy.
That just like, I mean, that's just that joke is for what I find entertaining. It really quick. It ticked all the boxes in one or two sentences.
Well, thank you. Thank you very, very
just
much.
It's like, oh man, it was great. It was just such a great movie. I had the first, it's funny, like in this, I do this pretty much with every movie and TV show. Within the first 5 minutes, I have that comedian reaction where I'm like, wait, why am I not in this movie? There's, and that was like, it was like, you know, that always happened to me for like 5 seconds when I watch anything, even though there's like there could be like a 12-year-old girl playing a role. And I was like, well, I don't understand why I didn't.
You're definitely on some of the shows, though. I don't know if you were that year or not.
Oh, no, no. Yeah, no, I'm not. I did the festival many, many times. I'm not.
No, I understand. That's how I feel every time I watch the Bourne trilogy. Like, can't believe I wasn't in Morocco for that fight scene.
Is there a part of you that does that at all?
I mean, not.
I mean, not consciously.
If it has to do with comedy, but not really. Like, meaning like it's not, there's movies I like, but I'm not like, oh, I should have been in the background of this. Why am I not working at this cafe in this very enjoyable action thriller?
I do that with comedy, though. Like, every single time you go like, wow. You know what, God, what I could have done as the daughter in that movie.
Yes.
But no, it was such a, I really loved the movie. And there's, I'll try not to just spit out all my favorite moments. There's a moment in there, I think, when you're sitting down and writing the greeting cards. Mm-hmm. You know, and for the listeners, I guess we'll you know, talk about this in the introduction that we record later, but you know, the movie's about the Eugene Merman Comedy Festival, and then ultimately about your wife Katie's cancer diagnosis and how you guys dealt with all that. But there's a moment when you're sitting down at your desk writing those cards. And I was just like, I just teared up, and I was like, oh man, this is, I'm like tearing up again. I was like, this is life in a nutshell. Like, this, scene. And I think when life is well lived, and I don't think, you know, certainly not everyone's capable of that. But you know, were there, you know, did you find that a natural reaction, were there periods leading up to that where you were just like, you know, just fully, you must have been like fully angry and, you know, things like that?
I mean, I think we both, I don't know, I think it's like, there was just a lot of, you mean in terms of the actual cancer, or?
We're just
dealing with it?
I guess dealing with it, you know, obviously, you know, as a comedian, you know, as comedians, we joke about things all the time, but you know, I just thought that was so powerful to be able to do that. And just so beautiful that to watch Katie react and critique.
I mean, that's, you know, the funny thing is like the sort of thing that's great about it is that, you know, partially it's that like it's some normalcy, like, you know, you can't not have the diagnosis and you can sort of fight it as much as medicine can. And she was, you know, by the time she died, she was maybe on the 15th line of medicine. Like she lived a year past, you know, sort of the maximum diagnosis. And, you know, you're sort of doing everything you can at any given point for it to be life and as normal and good as possible. And so like some of that, of course, is like you're doing bits about it and she's kind of like, ah, that works, that doesn't, or like this is, you know, like there were other jokes that she's like, oh, that's not exactly how that happened. And I was like, oh, I don't know, I think that is, but like anything that she was like, I don't think like that's story. So you know, that almost was this like, it was grounding in a certain sense, to like go through that, or anything we did that was like what life would be almost, you know, in spite of cancer, though it's all, you know, in conjunction with.
Imagine Gaffigan also had a lot, you know, writing with his wife, yeah, constantly, I'm sure is very similar to your situation as well.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. That happened around the same time too, right?
Yeah. I mean, yes, though there's also like, I mean, there's also like, there's a lot of, you know, cancer that like you recover from. And then there's some that sort of like, there's survivors and then there's lifers.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of like lifers are, you know, people where they're, you know, you might live for some number of years and maybe even a lot, but you never, you know, it doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Katie first was diagnosed in 2011 and it actually did go away. And we thought like, this would be a blip where, I mean, a blip is extreme, but meaning like she had chemotherapy, yeah, and radiation and, you know, for about a year, it wasn't there, and you get, you know, checks every half year. And then, you know, basically a little over a year after she had finished her treatments, you know, except for the like sort of there's like pills that you take every day just so it doesn't come back. And then they did find it. And so then all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is now permanent. And, you know, you might live for 2 years, you might live for five. And in her case, basically six.
Yeah. And so when you started making the movie, had she been diagnosed at that point?
Yeah. I mean, we had, you know, moved to the Cape. I think part of it was that Julie and I both moved to Massachusetts, and, you know, the festival was really fun, but, you know, like, it was just like not realistic for us to go back to New York. And also so many people had moved that like logistically,
yeah,
us not being there and so many of the comics not being there. And we'd always wanted to kind of document it. And, you know, so it sort of was like, but then part of it was, part of the reason it was ending was that we moved. And then part of the reason I had moved was to be closer to family because of Katie, and like wanting to have a son and all this stuff. So it just like was so intertwined that it would be it would just be leaving out too much.
Yeah, yeah.
However, sort of hard, but also in the end, like, it's, you know, I love that it's like a document both of an era and of Katie. Like, to me,
yeah,
so much of it was that there's this, like, you know, record of Katie.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's beautiful, and she's it sounds ridiculous to say, oh, she's amazing in it, like she's in a, you know, a role, yeah. but you know, she has some of the some of the best lines in the movie, you know, and yeah. It's amazing how the, you know, it's just like at every, you know, despite all the emotion of the movie, I think it remains, it's hilarious the whole time. You know, I'm like sitting there crying watching it, and then I'm laughing my ass off. And
John Glazer's story was such an amazing addition to that.
Yeah,
and none, was any of that planned, like, for that final show, or was that kind of?
No, I mean, the thing about all of it is it sort of what anybody wants yeah. to do. So, like, I mean, I think, like, Gaffigan said, yeah. who's, like, you know, joke writer, like, he clearly planned those jokes. And then Glazer, like, there was a whole other bit involving a giant sandwich that isn't, like,
oh,
maybe the sandwich is in the background of his bit, but, like, that isn't in the movie. But then, like, his story about his dad, which he hadn't yeah. planned, is.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and the same with Bobcat. Oh, I think yeah. he had maybe planned other stuff, but, you know, decided to tell mm-hmm. the story he told. So
yeah, those were all, I mean, it was amazing, like, you know, in terms of yeah documenting that whole scene and the festival, but also yeah as the in the way that, you know, Bobcat and John and Jim and you, of course, and Katie, and, you know, sharing those stories, it was really like such a, it was just a, sort of just a beautiful portrait of life, and, you know, of, I don't know, just community of just being human. And I just, I was actually irritated by how many times I started crying. I was like, God damn it. I don't know.
That was the original title of the movie. You'll be irritated by how many times you cry.
Like, and I, you know, and I was like wondering, I was like, is this pandemic like opening me up to emotions? I do, you know, because I'm not like a, you know, I feel like I don't cry very easily, but I found myself, I don't know if you've watched that show Unorthodox.
I haven't, though. I've heard about it.
But I watched that thing, and I, you know, I found, I was sitting there, you know, getting teary watching that. And I was just like, I can't remember the last time I cried watching a TV show. But anyway, yeah, it was great. And, but, you know, talking about the, you know, the scene going back to Invite Them Up, you know, that you had with Bobby Tisdale, which I, you know, mentioned for the listener. Clearly, you know, this stuff. But
yes. And Holly Schlesinger, who's a writer for Bob's yeah. book, The Show.
Yeah. And that was actually the second comedy show I ever saw in my life.
Wow.
Oh, really? What was the first?
Sweet, of course.
Oh. I thought you meant like the first was, you know, Howie Mandel when I was 9 years old. I didn't know what.
Well, the first.
You mean like as a grown up?
Yeah, like going to a, you know, a show where there's a variety of comedians, and but the first one actually that I ever saw was Bobcat Goldthwait.
Oh wow!
Who, you know, is you know, has always been one of my favorite comedians, and he's almost one of my favorite comedians twice. Because he is, you know, was in character for so long, and then now he's, you know, more himself.
You just like hear some really mm-hmm. funny stand-up.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, yeah, that was my first, the first comedian I ever saw live, and it was like really awakening. But, you know, because up until that point in my life, I always thought live comedy was just, I was like, oh, these are like me and my friends in class joking around, and they just go out and start joking around. Like I didn't realize that it was written.
Like mm-hmm. right,
I thought it was just
like a off the cuff person who keeps giving information that always ends in laughter.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, they just set them loose. And yep. But so he came to town, and I went. And but he was like, and there was an interview in the in the local arts paper, and I can't remember what the joke was, and he said it, and then he was on, you know, local, you know, morning news or something. And he said, I was like, wait a minute, that's the same joke he said in the paper. And because, you know, as a kid, I was already like, you can't repeat a joke at Thanksgiving dinner. Like, you know, you can only say it once, you know, and break it out the next year, maybe.
Yeah, I remember hearing the album version of Chris Rock's Bigger and Blacker, and it was a completely different, and same material, but a totally different show that he put on the album, and thinking like, oh, that's, I guess they have to just keep telling the same jokes. But I remember thinking, hearing it a second time was just like never as funny as the first time I heard it.
Right, because you're no longer surprised.
Right. Yeah, that was like such a same thing. It was like, oh yeah, so this is all prepared. And
that's that's a weird thing with. I mean, I guess it's as you say, you're no longer surprised. But like the cruel thing about comedy versus music is music, you're encouraged to go out and play your oldest, best known songs. In comedy, you're criticized if you don't do the exact opposite.
You basically have to write new stuff, which is why also some people don't put out a ton of things, you know, if they're like, oh, I just want to tour with this.
I don't know if this is true, but someone told me a story about John Mayer when he was doing stand-up in New York, complaining about having to play the hits all the time.
The hits of his songs or his jokes?
His songs.
Okay.
And yeah. You know, he was at the Olive Tree with, you know, a table with people, and Chris Rock was sitting at the table, and he was just like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I would kill to be able to just go out and do my bits from 20 years ago, you know?
Right.
That would be so great, but you can't.
Yes.
Anyway, but sorry for long digression, but going back to Invite Them Up, the second show I saw, you know, right when I moved to, shortly after I moved to New York. And I remember that, you know, the whole Rafifi scene of Invite Them Up and Oh Hello and Andre Dubuchet's show, you know, you sort of forget. Because I don't know if you agree or not, but I feel like it's sort of changed, where maybe I'm being nostalgic or just plain old, but I feel like, you know, when I started seeing these stuff, when I started in 2005, like you would see such a range of stuff, some of the weirdest stuff you would see, you know, obviously, you know, you'd see like John Mulaney, and you'd, you know, the first time you see him, you're like, oh, that guy's going to be a famous millionaire. And then you could see someone else and be like, that guy will probably die penniless, but he's a fucking genius. You know what I mean? Like, it was such a range.
I feel like a majority of people, like, meaning in general, if you're someone who can like kill for say 45 to 60 minutes, then like you'll probably be some form of a working comedian. And a lot of the people you'd see that like, you'd be like, that person will die penniless, they actually just became, they were really funny and then became writers for shows that like needed that sort of, like, that someone who could make these weird funny bits.
You know? They kind of disappear into a writer's room.
Yeah. Like, more of the people, I think, if you look through the lineups, became professional comedians than probably didn't.
Yeah. It was pretty amazing. To see like, you know, where everyone, you know, went and ended up and things like that. And, but I also feel like, that I, you know, being, I think there's me and three other people still in New York, maybe. No, more than that, but
you could count them.
Yeah, you can't.
Like, that's not, like, I used to always think, like, you could almost list, certainly of our, like, generation and slightly older, and then, like, there's now, you know, hundreds of new comics that I don't know, but, like, at some point I was like, oh, yeah, here are the comedians in New York, and then, like, I could obviously not list everyone in LA.
Yeah, it's I remember the feelings. I remember being at San Francisco Sketch Fest backstage. I was about to do a show with Michael Showalter, and he was saying, and he still lived in New York at the time, so this would have been, I don't know how many years ago, And he was saying, Dave, you know, I have this idea for like a show about, yeah, about the few of
is
us.
Is it called Staying Put?
Yeah, it was like, yeah, his idea of like the 10 people that were still in New York. It's like, we'll just do a show about like not leaving. Yeah,
it was him and Glazer. And they, I mean, I don't like, they literally came to my house in Park Slope however long after that and filmed something. And I think within days of filming at my house, Showalter was like, I'm moving to LA.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Like, that happened, and I was like, because I felt like, I'm like, okay, at least there's Eugene, there's Michael Showalter, and you know, Todd Barry, Janine Garofalo, like, there was, like, enough that I'm like, okay. But, and then when I heard Michael was moving to LA, I was like, all right, I give up. This is, I'm on my own. And then, but I applaud you for, I applaud anyone who, I mean, I don't hate LA, but I feel like I don't have the, whatever the thing is that makes you move there, but, talent.
Well, I mean, I think like for me, you know, I'd like to work on projects with friends, and I essentially get to do that, and I can record Bob's remotely. Mm-hmm. So for me, I can work without being in LA. If I thought I couldn't, then I'd maybe have to be in LA. And, you know, so I think that's why I'm in Massachusetts, is largely because I can do the things I like for work while also like seeing my family and friends.
Yeah, you can have a sort of a normal life, relatively speaking.
Is there any kind of comedy scene in Cape Cod?
No, not really, but there's one in Boston.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Boston.
So, like, I, you know, do shows there and am there half the time now. So there's a scene there, but it's still, like, not exactly New York or L.A. Like, I miss a lot of the people in New York and friends that are in L.A. and moved to L.A.
Mm-hmm. How has that been, like, living? How, you've been there for how many years now?
On the Cape, I mean, five-ish years, wow, plus or minus. And then in Boston, like, you know, we bought a place in Somerville, and then our, like, Ollie started going to school until the pandemic. So we were there a lot of the time in the fall, basically. And then, came, you know, then are back on the Cape because we have a yard here and Ollie can like play.
Yeah. And I mean, I can't imagine like, you have to throw a pandemic on you, like in the midst of everything else that's going on. Like,
I will just say, I'm not a fan of the pandemic. I know some people are really liking the pandemic. I find it massively disappointing.
Yeah, it's
but and then the also like I'm in a place in a house with a yard, like, you know, I know that there's many more people like screwed so much more that it's like,
yeah
and then also like I feel so sad for people who maybe don't like today I saw that there's some protests happening in Michigan where people are in cars protesting like social distancing, which I don't fully understand
what are they protesting?
I think that the enforcement of social distancing by the governor.
Oh, they're they want to stop.
They want to stop, but not enough to
get out of their cars.
I you know, I can't answer the question. I just saw a thing, and I also just like feel bad because I feel like there's people who don't believe the gravity of the tragedy that is happening and coming, you know, and I just like feel very bad for them. But yeah, it's so weird being like, you know, so focused on like making sure like Ollie's okay and just like talking to him about death and these things. And then all of a sudden it's just like, okay, like there's no more school as of yesterday. And like,
yeah,
and like I just like took him, I was like, well, there's no like this will, we should just stop going to, you should stop going to school and we should go to where we have a yard.
How old is he? He's four.
He's three and a half, but very tall.
Well, that's good. So, yeah, so he can't possibly, the pandemic isn't on his radar.
That part of it, I think, like, he's like, you know, he misses, I mean, I think, like, he's, in a sense, he's okay. Like, he watches TV, he gets to play, you know, he wasn't like, he was enjoying school, but not like, but he's not like falling behind on anything. You know, because he's 3 and a half.
Yeah.
So, you know, that okay. part, like, if, you know, and I think for some kids, it's easier to have structure and some, you know, again, I think he's 3 and a half. So far he's fine with stuff. I think he like is confused why we're not interacting with anybody. And I am like, there's germs, like explaining it, but like to a 3 and a half year old,
mm-hmm.
you know, hopefully enough that he's like not paranoid, but enough that he, I don't know. Is like okay.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, he must. I mean, you know, in aside from, you know, being a great dad, which I have no doubt you are, you must, I imagine if you're gonna get stuck with one person, you're probably pretty entertaining. Especially
yeah, though, I mean, like we do joke around a lot, and like he, like it's always like really funny when I say something and he's like, no, like, and he's like gets that I'm kidding, but I don't know. Like, I think like, it's not like, like my jokes are more for me probably, but yeah, he's, I think he's been, he's, I think more okay with this than I am. I would say like,
yeah.
he kind of is like, this is fairly fun. You're around all the time. You make me food whenever I want it. And we play and watch TV. You know, like he's, I think it's like, if this continues for some number of months, that's like one thing. I think if it's like half a year, a year, a year and a half, like, I don't know, like then it'll be like half of his lifetime is spent hiding from humanity. Like the difference between this and all of mankind being gone will be like, oh, either could be true.
Yeah. Cause you, it must be, yeah, Cape Cod is, you know, fairly remote, so you could probably, yeah, not see a human up close pretty easily.
Yeah, yes, it's, I mean, yeah, it's not like we're, I mean, we're also just mostly home. It's,
right.
You know, but there is like forests and stuff that are empty and,
yeah,
you know, things like that. But, you know, mostly we're just hanging out in our yard and inside.
Is there any, you know, I've talked to a few other friends who have babies and very young children, and they've said they've taken some comfort in hanging out with someone who has no idea what's going on. Is there any truth to that? Or not no, really?
Not for me, no. Because it's like, because again, it's sort of like you try to live in like the moment and kind of, you know, be like, just like, let's just get to tomorrow, but
mm-hmm.
but there's just so much unknown, like, you know, it's at least another month of this, but likely a month and a half, 2 months, and then like, I don't even know, I don't know what the future looks like, and I'm not, and I don't have confidence. I have like confidence in the like association of governors in the Northeast and on the West Coast,
yeah,
but like I feel like even if you were to like the president, like he just gets on TV and misinforms, says things that are just like not happening, and then fights with reporters. It's just like very not comforting. So it's just like a failure of like almost outside of policy, and his policy is also a failure. It's just a failure of what you're like, of what you should do as a leader.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty.
And, sorry, go on.
Yeah, yeah, it's remarkable. I've been, we left New York about 2.5 weeks ago now, and I've been.
Where are you?
I'm in a small Finnish fishing village in northeastern Ohio. I mean, it's not that Finnish anymore, but it's about 45 minutes east of Cleveland, just in this.
Oh, wow. So can you fish? Are you?
I'm not a.
Wait, are you like fishing?
I don't, but I could.
Okay. You have like meaning like not now, but in June.
I saw people fishing the other day. but there's not much you want to pull out of Lake Erie, really. I mean,
fair.
There's Walt, but you know, I won't be doing it. But God, I forgot my whole. Now I got really distracted.
I said that I was disappointed in the federal.
I'm hung up on fishing. No, my point is there's no television where I am. In this apartment my girlfriend and I are in. And though obviously I get plenty of news from the internet, but I haven't, you know, but in the weeks, the couple of weeks before we left, you know, the TV would be on all the time and we would, you know, right. See all this stuff. And so, but last night I finally watched, one of Trump's addresses. And I was like, wow, even if I was on board with this guy, which I'm the opposite, I would be like, I would not be psyched.
Yeah,
at this.
I mean, and I haven't, what's funny is I haven't really watched like a full, I also haven't watched the news on TV. Like, it's all sort of reading articles and seeing like snippets, but it's just like, it's also one of those things where there's like there's a scientific response to a pandemic, and it is, you know, not happening at the federal level. Like, and it is becoming clear, like each day of failure, like it would be, I don't know, like if we were attacked, like I'm very scared that he would fail completely in a war. Because he isn't responding to the actual threat. He's like responding to just random paranoia.
Yeah. He's yelling at CNN reporters instead of.
Yeah. And there's like a pandemic.
Yeah.
That he seems unaware of in his actions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's remarkable. I
think all we can hope for is that he contracts it and very quickly dies. I think that's the
only way. Well, he could also choose to resign. He might just go like, you know what? This is a bit much for me. This is not my strong suit. And then hand it over to a different game show host.
Yeah, yeah.
Who I think would do a better job.
Chuck Woolery.
You know, I bet I feel like he wouldn't be my first choice. But it's not impossible. I'm not sure there's a worse person to lead us. Like, anyone who wouldn't be probably a sociopath, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Woolery has feelings. I don't know.
He might.
I mean, not like you wouldn't get that impression from Twitter, but
yeah. Yeah. Chuck Woolery, I feel like he's the game show host. He's a fan of Trump, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's like a very, he did, he ran TV's Tinder.
Oh, Love Connection. Yep. Yeah.
Like, well,
yeah.
Love Connection.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
I knew it had a different name. yes, he would be, but I would be hard pressed to find a game show host who would do a worse job than the current game show host.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable.
But I look forward to finding out. Wouldn't that be great to be like, oh my God, Chuck Woolery is worse.
Oh my God. Yeah, maybe everyone, you know, takes a turn. Yeah. Everyone gets one address.
Let's give each game show host 1 year to see what they can do with the country until maybe we go back to people who professionally run government.
Yeah.
I don't know, but who knows?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. But yeah, as you say, the East Coast and West Coast governors are at least providing some sort of.
So to summarize, don't love the pandemic. Having a son is very enjoyable, but not comforting in terms of like, oh, he doesn't know about the pandemic. Like,
I have nothing to. My only escape really is when I was playing with the dog, who truly doesn't know.
That's true. And
I just throw the ball to her, and I'm like, okay, this is fully. But even that, there's an element of like, wait a minute, we can't let anyone else touch this ball.
Yeah, I mean, Ollie certainly is aware that like everything is closed and we can't go anywhere. He's just kind of for now okay with it, and it's been in a sense like a little over a month. I don't know, month like two, like after month two, like I wonder if like Like, will he just be growing up with no contact?
Yeah, did you ever read that article from a few years ago about the guy who, when he was about 25, just drove his car to the edge of the woods and left the keys on the dashboard and then just walked into the woods and just lived on his own for like 20 odd years?
No.
Somewhere, I think in the Northeast. Yeah, it was like on The Guardian or something. He lived, you know, in Vermont or something, and he just made... He'd sleep in the woods, and he would just break into people's summer homes to shower. And
oh,
he did
at
it
first.
For,
I was like, "Wow, he." Oh, okay.
I thought you meant like camping.
Yes, I read about a similar thing, but I think it was either on Martha's Vineyard or Nantucket.
Oh, maybe it could have been. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, like he maybe built there. An underground apartment.
Yeah, he just. But he just. Yeah, he kind
of. Yes, sorry, like, that guy I'm aware of.
And people knew, they're like, oh yeah, we knew some guy comes in here.
And I think he like went to local bars.
Oh really?
Yeah, I think I mean, first of all, could there be two guys? Yes. But yeah, there was definitely a person on either Nantucket or Martha's Vineyard who I think like built an apartment in the woods and then would like kind of hang out around town and like I think ran electricity to it and stuff.
Oh, that's okay. This is cheating.
Yeah. At first, I was like, "Oh wow, he just went to the edge." But I mean, the two could be two different guys. That's very
maybe. I gotta get googling, and we'll do a
follow up,
bonus episode. Yeah. But I wanted to mention this, and if you want this part cut out, just say
sure.
So, and we'll cut out this part where I'm talking right now. But you posted something the other day that I read talking about Ali. That was more, it was just, when you were talking about driving around with him and saying that he missed his mother and then he said he wanted to draw pictures and send them to people all over the world so people would never forget her.
Yeah. And, he did. It was, he said that he was like, and, you know, we talk about her and yeah, he had said that, like, he was like, I miss mama. And I was like, I miss mama too. And then, yeah, he said, can we draw pictures and send them around the world so people remember her? And I was like, yeah, we can absolutely do that. And, you know, it's funny because he is also like 3 and a half. So he, like, you know, he was like, great. And then he hasn't like mentioned it, even though I think at some point, you know, we will actually do something like that. Like, I do have friends around the world and can send photos.
Yeah.
And I think, like, he would probably really enjoy it. And it was just such a sweet thought. Like it was both, I mean, it's like everything. Like it's, there's like both like a sadness and a real beauty to it.
Yeah. And, but it sort of, that was, I know that's not part of the movie, but almost like just that little, that sort of little story encapsulates also the feeling of the movie could, you know, sort of, it's sort of like, I was telling my girlfriend that story last night at dinner, and this is, I watched the movie last night and I was telling her the story at dinner. We're just sitting there eating ziti, and I couldn't even get the story. I started crying while we're sitting there. I couldn't even get to like the I just started crying. And she's like, what are you, and but it was just such a beautiful, sweet, and you know, all those
I feel like that's a lot of my day is sort of like being like a mix of like kind of being and then like randomly crying and then, you know, being okay again. And, and this, I think it's why I'm like so disappointed in the pandemic. Like all the things you would normally, like I was like, here's what I'll do to like try to get over grief and like do stuff with Ollie. And then it's like, no, you're going to be in lockdown for between like 3 and 18 months. And then you can deal with your problem. It's like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's...
yeah.
That's... I can't imagine. This is not even close. But I remember right after my mother died, I got asked to go on a cruise for what used to be the Air America cruise. It was called, like, Progressive Voices Cruise. And, it sounds like the setup to a joke because it was like me, Rachel Maddow, Ronald Reagan Jr., Liz Winstead, Hal Sparks, Hal actually got me on the thing, and Liz, Hal, and I each did a set each night. But so we go on this, cruise, you know, to Mexico for a few days, and my mother had just died like a week earlier. Mm-hmm. And everyone on the cruise is like in the ballpark of my mother's age. And like, Hal had asked me, I think he invited me on the cruise as, you know, like, oh, get you out. And then I was like, oh my gosh, this is making me think about it so much more. But anyway, and I realized that doesn't even scratch the surface of what you're going through.
But I think it actually does. Like, meaning, it's not like one grief is, you know, everybody's grief is their grief. So I think, loss is loss, and it's just weird, like, not being able to talk to somebody again is, you know, is the sort of shared thing. And yeah, I don't know.
It's like, I think when, I mean, I really only have my mother as someone that close to me, but it was when that happened, I was like,
I have both my wife and Jim Morrison. So that's my advantage.
But it's like, I was like, wait, you know, cause when you're a kid, obviously when you lose some, you know, you lose your grandparents or whatever, you go like, oh, okay, people get old, and, you know, but when you lose someone that's really so connected, you know, so they are your life, and, you know, your body can't even, I thought for months, I would catch myself thinking like, I need to find like a couple weeks where I can go and find her. She must be somewhere. Like, I would not consciously, but I'd be like doing the dishes, and I would be like, what's going on in the back of my head? And I would realize I'd be thinking this irrational thought.
But also, like, talking to Ollie, like, he was, you know, there was like a real progression of how to talk about it. Like, at first I told him, you know, and also like talking to like a child psychologist and like getting advice. Like, at first it was just that she was in a safe place. She was very sick. She was in a safe place. Like, we couldn't visit her, and she couldn't visit us. And then it's funny, cause there was this, and he kind of, you know, he would repeat things that he would also like wonder if she was coming back, and I would have to feel like she isn't. And then at some point when I went to like his school to have like lunch, there was like a kid who, like, and it was like him and a few friends, and they were really sweet. And like, one of them was like, you know, I think one was like, oh, my mom's like a doctor. Another was like, oh, my like dad plays soccer and is a doctor. And then the kid was like, does Ollie have a mom? And I was like, and she was like, is she dead? And I was like, oh, I guess you guys are all talking about it. And I was like, yes, she, you know, she died. And then even when I was leaving, there was like another little girl who was like, and she had said, are you Ollie's like daddy? And I was like, yes. And she was like, oh, is Ollie's mom dead? And I was like, yes, thank you for asking. and it's, you know, it's sort of like, but the fact that he, you know, friends there talk about it. And there's also like an age from like 3-something to basically like 5 or so. So the kids that are older, like, totally understand it. But, you know, in that same sense, like him talking about making like drawings and pictures to send around so people remember her, like, he's, you know, I think coming to understand it, however, you know, hard that is. And my guess is that every year that he gets older, he'll understand it, you know, in a new way.
Yeah. In
a different way. But yeah, the, you know, for a while, you know, he definitely wanted to find her. And it is sort of strange. Like, I've definitely found myself like doing, like, going for a walk and being like, oh, I should call Katie to see if she's, and then just like all of a sudden going like, oh,
yeah, yeah.
You know, so there is that, you know, it's just that happens, and it's this weird thing. And, you know.
Yeah. It's very like, yeah, after I lost my mom, I would find myself constantly like patting my like reaching for the phone, you know, out for my grabbing coffee in the morning or whatever, and be like, oh, I think I thought about more about calling her after she was gone than when she was alive. Just sort of, you know, just it's a very, anyway.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, my main thing with Ollie is trying to make sure that he knows that it's like, you know, very normal to miss her and to talk about her and like,
yeah,
not, that there's nothing, like, nothing taboo.
Right.
And, you know, I guess we'll see. I mean, he's 3 and a half, so we'll like check in again, yeah, 4 and 6 and see if it's like worked or not.
Well, he sounds like a pretty amazing kid. Anyway, well, we don't want to take too much of your time, but thank you so much for sure.
Thank you for talking with us today.
And I'm so sorry about Katie. And
thank you.
And but I the movie is so beautiful and great and just funny and a great tribute to her as well.
Thank you very, very much. Yeah, I mean, when, you know, also, I don't know if I've said it, but so much of it is Julie Smith, who produced the festival and directed.
Yeah, she's great.
The movie, like, you know, it's, and also like in the movie, she's like not that present because she doesn't like being on camera, obviously, other than she directed it. But like, she is also a big part of it and a big part of the story. And Katie helping Julie with, like, you know, the sort of cancer part of the story. I just wanted to mention that.
I love her. She's, can I tell a completely non sequitur, one of my favorite, not that I have a million Julie Smith stories, but
sure, yeah. Yes, years ago
when she was still in New York, I swear she said this to me, but Julie, if you hear this and I'm wrong, I'll do a disclaimer, but she had started smoking American Spirits because she had somehow read that she misunderstood and thought that they weren't addictive, and then she found out that they were addictive. I don't know if am I getting this wrong?
I'm not sure that's true, though. I doubt it, but
okay. So the Snopes says that's false, but I swear she said this to me and we were just laughing about it. Like she had misread the package or
right
something.
right.
Anyway,
yeah.
All right, so that's probably
well, who knows,
manufactured in my brain. But I do get a kick out of just
it is a very funny look. I think it's a funny story. I don't know if Julie said it.
Thanks for giving me that. It might be completely manufactured in my brain, but I choose to remember it as such. And it's anyway, we could probably just cut that out.
That's staying in. You could, for sure.
That's the perfect thing to release on the 10th anniversary of the movie as bonus material.
Bonus content.
Here's an extra 84 seconds.
I'm gonna my Dave's muddy memories. Anyway, and we'll do a proper plug of this at the end when we record the outro. But when will this be? It'll be available streaming soon and all that.
Are you asking me about the movie? No.
The
movie?
Yeah, the movie.
Oh, the movie is out. It came out a week ago.
Oh, it's out already.
So the movie is available to be streamed. You can get it on iTunes and Amazon and wherever else.
Okay, great. I wasn't sure if it was.
Sorry. Yes, it is available.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I thought at first you were asking when this podcast would be available. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I'll leave it to you two.
I turned the tables on
you. Yeah. yes, the movie is out. People can watch it now.
When am I going to sleep tonight?
Yeah, you're going to go to sleep around 10:45, but stay up till about midnight.
All right, so we'll put all that information in now. But anyway, Eugene, thank you so much.
Thank you very, very much.
Yeah, thank you so much for doing this.
And hopefully we'll see you as soon as we're all allowed to be humans again.
All righty, bye-bye.
All right, thanks again. Bye-bye.
Bye, Eugene.
You've been listening to